night, the country's deadly measles outbreak is getting worse, spreading at an alarming rate in Texas. 59 new cases have been reported there since Tuesday, leaving 14 people hospitalized.
We just don't know how bad it's going to get.
Megan Messick is the co-owner of Tiny Tots U Learning Academy in Lubbock. Six children who attend the Texas daycare have tested positive for measles.
I've got parents that are upset because we're doing so much and then, you know, isolating their children. And then you've got other parents that are like, do more.
It's something Lubbock County Public Health Director Catherine Wells feared.
I think this demonstrates how infectious measles is. It is our most infectious virus that we know about.
More than 600 cases have been reported across 21 states and the capital so far. Health experts say it's a shocking comeback for a disease declared eliminated in this country 25 years ago because of the vaccine.
Measles is going to find those unvaccinated populations. Getting the vaccine now before you're exposed to measles is really the best way we can prevent you from getting measles.
In Texas, the majority of cases and hospitalizations are occurring in unvaccinated kids. One unvaccinated school-age child has died.
This is not something that I was expecting to be working on this year as a public health department.
Alarming numbers signaling a desperate need to slow the spread. Maya Eaglin, NBC News.
Okay, well, this is a really frightening time, I think, in this country for healthcare. Whether you are elderly, whether you're a mom with these young children, with babies, trying to decide whether to let them have all of these vaccines. I just talked to my elderly aunt and uncle, and they have had nightmare experiences in the emergency department of a very reputable area hospital, waiting seven hours for just care and not being seen at all. It's hard to find a good doctor. It's hard to trust your doctor. And let me just say that doctors are under tremendous pressure to conform to the narrative of whatever the powers that be think they should say. Like I already hear in that report that on measles, on the vaccine, they're borrowing the words of COVID. Stop the spread. What else did they say? And we're going to talk about these health issues. One other thing that's in the news is that now one in 31 8-year-old boys are diagnosed with autism in this country. One in 31. I bet you every one of you knows, I'd be shocked if you didn't know someone that's diagnosed with autism. So we have multiple health problems. Well, we have a new HHS secretary. His name is RFK Jr., and he is tackling all these hard things. So how's he doing? How's he doing? Can he do this? Can he turn it back? What's the truth about the measles vaccine? What's the truth about autism? It's shocking the things that are coming out now with red dye, all of that. Well, we're going to discuss it today with Dr. Robert Malone, and you will not want to miss this discussion. And speaking of health, abortion has remained the world's leading cause of death, not number 10, number 9, the leading cause of death for the fifth consecutive year, and that was the metric in 2023. And that was despite the overturn of Roe versus Wade. Because, of course, the abortion pill has, in this country and around the world, really, has made it so easy. I put fingers, apply quotes, because it's not easy. It's horrible. That abortion pill is horrible. And I pray that soon that thing will be taken off the market and people will understand the damage it's doing. Nevertheless, women are signing up for it. They're taking the pill. And that's why the abortion rates are so high. Well, preborn is in the business of trying to persuade young women by showing them their baby in the womb when they're just beginning to move and suck their thumb and have the hiccups, to let them see their baby and connect with it and not go through with the abortion. That's what they do, and it's very effective. They couldn't do it without your help. I say repeatedly that you are responsible for the saving of so many lives. Preborn has found the perfect formula because it's God's idea. It's just truth. Truth, their baby right in front. What would Jesus do if he was trying to stop an abortion? What would he do? He maybe would let the moms have some sort of vision of the baby inside her womb. That's probably what he would do. And so it's a powerful method, and you have made it possible for lots of women to make a better choice for themselves and for their baby. If you'd like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Well, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can call me at 662-821-2040. You can find us on any social media platform that is your favorite, and you can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform. But our home base is afr.net, afr.net. But you can listen on Spotify, Amazon, whatever your favorite is. You can go to sandyrios.com and listen there pretty easily. Well, today it's just a fascinating discussion. It always is a fascinating discussion with Dr. Robert Malone, and that's what you'll hear on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Let's start with Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. seen here greeting a supporter. It's always good to meet a fan, but RFK is known for his controversial health ideas like drinking raw milk and adding roadkill to the food pyramid. But the conspiracy theory that he's most known for is that vaccines cause autism. He's basically a health expert, the same way Katy Perry is a rocket scientist.
You never know how much love is inside of you, how loved you are until the day you launch.
I have a teenage dream that she shut the f*** up. So, unsurprisingly, RFK Jr. brought his anti-vax policies to the administration. And yesterday, he gave a speech about autism, and people are pissed.
Comments from Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that are raising eyebrows. During his first news conference as the nation's top health official, he addressed rising autism rates while calling the disease preventable.
RFK Jr.'s bleak description of people living with autism causing outrage.
Autism destroys families. These are kids who will never pay taxes.
Wow. Wait, that... That's what you're going to lead with? Like, that's the big tragedy for you? These poor kids will never know the joy of attaching a Schedule K to a 1040A.
All right. Sandy Rios with you, and that's the voice of, let's see, The Daily Show. All of those people laughing are Americans, and that's a former, recently, it sounds to me like, former Chinese national who's hosting, making fun of our director of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., with everyone laughing uproariously. Well, that's the state America is in. We've got some really good men trying to save this republic in any way they can, and then we have the mockers. And sadly, too many people are willing to join the mocking team. Well, what is the truth about the whole move to make America healthy again? What's the truth about measles, about red dye, about autism, all of those things? Well, I can't think of anyone better to answer those questions than Dr. Robert Malone. I won't introduce him because his bio is too long, but Dr. Malone is a frequent guest, and if you don't know who he is, look it up, because he is a scientist with a stellar record and was one of the loudest, most bold spokesmen against the way the COVID virus was being handled. And so he joins us this morning. Dr. Malone, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sandy. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. So Robert RFK Jr. is a friend of yours. And of course, you're watching this closely and you're writing about it a lot on your Substack. Well, the original plan when RFK Jr. was actually went through confirmation was that he was tasked with making America healthy again. That's a pretty big task, but it's something he's been working on for years. You know him well. How do you think he's doing?
I think he's doing a great job in an extremely difficult position, situation. He has inherited a major mess in HHS and decades of denialism about a variety of different risks and failure to act on the actual science concerning many different issues. Of course, the latest one involved yesterday's press conference concerning the decision by Marty McCarty of FDA, the new director head of FDA, that all petrochemical-based dyes would be removed from American foods by the end of 2016. That's quite a timeline. A lot of people think, well, why aren't they being removed right now? Well, it is. They are providing a little bit of oxygen for the industry to retool and to transition to dyes that are derived from natural sources like beet and carrot juice. And Marty said that he's going to accelerate authorization of natural dyes, such as I mentioned, dyes from natural sources, plant sources in particular, so that the industry has options and they can maintain, in general, the appearance of a lot of their products. These artificial petrochemical-based dyes are in almost all of the processed foods that we eat, from yogurt, cheese, all sodas, of course, all kinds of things that are targeted at children. And, of course, we also know that these dyes are not used in Europe, and yet these same products are marketed. They're just not as bright and sparkly because they use plant-based dyes. So that's just one example, but he's... concurrent with the confirmation, there was an unfortunate outbreak of measles in a West Texas Mennonite community that has, historically for decades not accepted vaccines, not promoted vaccination, and yet media tried to attribute this somehow to RFK Jr. and try to build the storyline that this was a predictor of what we would see as an increasing trend once that Bobby was confirmed. That's a false narrative, entirely concocted. It's weaponized. You just listen to this comedy routine that, yes, frankly, I find shocking and so superficial just completely spins and overlooks the substantial issues. Autism is one of the core issues that President Trump tasked RFK Jr. with in creation of the MAHA Commission. And the president is sincerely concerned about chronic health conditions and over-medication in children. This is a hot button for him. I don't know, we can speculate whether it has anything to do with his experiences with Barron or his other children, but he is sincerely concerned about the health of America's children. Bless his heart. And he's tasked Bobby with dealing with this, and specifically with autism. Now, I agree, that press conference could have been managed a little bit better. What transpired there, if you walk it back, is the CDC finally issued 2 years late a report that they generated in 2022 about autism rates. And the report showed that the incidence of the autism spectrum disorders, ASD, has continued to climb, really to epidemic levels. And what Bobby, the way he kind of stubbed his toe there, was he started off speaking about the CDC report and how shocking that was. And then he transitioned to talking about severe autism as opposed to autism spectrum disorders. Severe autism is only about 25% of the total portfolio that goes into autism spectrum disorders. But he didn't make that distinction until later in his talk. And so when he was talking about autism in the way that he was about these severe manifestations, he didn't emphasize that he was talking about severe autism.
Dr. Malone, let me jump in.
Yes.
Let me jump in because we have a clip of what he said, and we so we're going. Let's do that because people might not understand what the controversy is if they didn't hear his statement. He is talking about autism, and this is one of the things he said, and this is what everyone's attacking him for saying, which is what Dr. Malone is explaining. So let's just listen to it. It's clip six.
Genes don't cause epidemics. You need an environmental toxin. These are kids who will never pay taxes. They'll never hold a job. They'll never play baseball. They'll never write a poem. They'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted. And we have to recognize we are doing this to our children.
All right, so that monologue on The Daily Show went on and on to take each of those things apart, Dr. Malone, make fun of it and mock it. And, of course, other news outlets, doctors are going on there outraged by what he had to say. So you're in the process of explaining what you're saying, that he's talking about a subset of the whole big bucket of autism, and it's the most severe, right?
Correct. And it is the consequence of the American Psychiatric Society in their latest Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, DSM, that broadened the definition of autism and included many other things that may well have different causes, may even have more of a genetic cause. And so that kind of obscures the nature of what's going on with these severe cases. But the severe autism, as Bobby was describing, also continues to climb at the same rate. And so this is really a weaponized false narrative, once again, that we're used to with corporate media and with these comedians and others that try to humiliate and gaslight people. This is a real problem, and it continues to grow. And when I was a child, we certainly had people in school that we called retarded back then. That's no longer politically correct.
Right.
But we didn't have children that were headbangers and incontinent. That just was not known.
Or unsociable, where they didn't talk to people. I don't remember anyone like that in my classes, Dr. Malone, who could not interact with people. They might be shy or something, but not like we're talking about now.
And the ridiculing of those parents, particularly women, mothers, who assert that their child was normal, their infant was normal, and then they accepted a vaccine series in, a very tight schedule, and suddenly their child was very different and was no longer tracking with the age-appropriate behaviors, et cetera. To ridicule these people strikes me as very similar to the ridiculing that was done on to women that were reporting they were having menstrual issues after receiving the SARS-CoV-2 vaccines. This gaslighting of patients that are reporting real phenomena is, at a minimum, extremely disrespectful. These people are experiencing real things, and these mothers are reporting real effects. And it could be that it's just a small subset. We don't really know, because this is an area that is basically forbidden from research since Andy Wakefield made his observations and then just got excoriated and run out. So every physician and medical researcher knows that this is a third rail. You just don't touch it. Otherwise, you're going to have your career ruined. And what's in progress right now, Jay Bhattacharya speaks about it at NIH, is they're going to create a safe space that will allow physicians and medical researchers to ask these questions, not presuming that they know the answer, but to ask the questions in a rigorous way with solid data to determine what is going on here. What are the cofactors? In his press conference, Bobby very studiously avoided ever saying the word vaccine. He talked about environmental toxins, which is a catch-all for a variety of things, not the least of which is glyphosate or Roundup. There are many things that are in our environment that probably contribute to autism. And just like it seems to be the case with the food dyes, what we may have in the case of autism is a multifactorial process where there's a combination of some degree of genetic susceptibility and various types of triggers that may set people up for development of autism. And many of these revolve around things that cause inflammation of the brain or central neuroinflammation. And in the face of this epidemic, to make this into a comedy routine is a little obscene.
I think so, too.
Incredibly disrespectful.
Especially by a Chinese national. I mean, I'm sorry. You can call me what you will. I mean, I'm sure he must have his citizenship, but he still has his Chinese accent, and it's very, very offensive, given our relationship with them, given their responsibility for the COVID virus. That's nothing funny about that. But I want to back to the, just to give a touch here, because we didn't play the part of his statements where he talks about stats. Now, I'm just going to give this one on autism. You know, I'll give it, but I would say, look, Dr. Malone, people are experiencing this. They know, even if they don't say it, they know there's a problem, that it's growing, that so many kids have autism that just comes out of the blue. Where did that come from? So one stat that he mentioned is that 1 in 31 8-year-old boys, 1 in 31 8-year-old boys in this country are diagnosed with autism now. So, I know the stats are more complete than that. Now, he promised there's going to be studies, and yet you spell out in one of your articles how complicated that is because of all of the different iterations of what they're calling autism. So how will they, in general, how in the world will they go about doing a study that they can reach a conclusion by September?
So Bobby's walked back that timeline a bit. As has Jay, and now they're saying they'll have significant data by September.
Okay.
Now, personally, I think that's even a little optimistic. I think Jay is about to have a rather rude encounter with the truth of how long it takes NIH to get a grant out the door, which is typically 3 to 5 years. So he's going to need Operation Warp Speed times 10. To get these things awarded, and he said that it's going to have normal review process. I think what they're now more realistically saying is they will start to get answers about the big drivers of autism by September. And the optimistic statement, they're going to understand the causes by then. I think that was in the heat of the moment, probably... might not have been my choice of wording, but what they can do is to hone down on the definition of autism. And if they elect, and I just speculate, I mean, I'm not writing these grants. I haven't been asked to write one of these proposals, and I'm not a big data specialist, but one approach would be to simplify the initial problem by just looking at severe autism, not looking at autism spectrum disorder, and focusing in on those data that are likely to be more clear, less complicated. The other variants of autism, I suspect, are going to have other causes, and if you look at them all at the same time, you're going to end up with a real confusion of findings and data that is going to make it hard to reach statistical significance. But if you just look at the really severe cases, those can't be argued. They are in your face. They, you know, chronic head banging, repetitive movements, incontinence, toe walking, those are all really clear-cut signs and symptoms, and any physician that sees that can agree on the diagnosis. So I suspect that's what they'll do, is they'll start, just like they're doing with their policy, they'll start with the easy stuff, and work up towards the harder stuff. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, of course. And I, you know, I was just thinking of a personal story of a friend that had a little boy, and he was diagnosed with autism, and she has pretty much destroyed her adult life blaming herself for giving him Diet Coke. The only reason I say that is because we do need to have answers, because when you do have a disabled child, you do tend to blame yourself. You wonder what you did.
Sandy, I'm so glad you said that. There's this long history in the United States of blaming the mother. Like, the mothers were blamed for schizophrenia back in the 50s and 60s. And the mothers were blamed for a number of psychological diagnoses, poor mothering. All of that's been debunked, but it destroyed those people's lives. And exactly as you're describing, it set them up for their entire lifetime as a mother and a protector of constantly second-guessing themselves and blaming themselves. It's a huge tragedy, and the American Psychiatric Association has a long history of making these overly broad generalizations that aren't really well-grounded in fact and data that destroy people's lives, and they should be held accountable for that at some point.
And that's why it's so important if we can come up with a factor that's causing autism. You know, this stat that you included in your Substack article, it's called A Doubling of Children with Severe Disabilities, really hit me, because I don't think I've ever told you that I had a daughter with severe disabilities. She died when she was about 34, and I took care of her at home for 20 years. I mean, diapering and bathing and feeding. So this always really is very personal to me. And you report that the number of children identified with disabilities severe has doubled in the last 50 years. And that's looped into this whole thing about what they're eating and what they're taking. I don't know, what does that mean? Is that kind of in the bucket with autism?
Autism is, and particularly severe autism, is a component of that, but there are other factors there. And what this really represents, Sandy, and I'm so sorry to hear that story, and my heart goes out to you. That must have really been a challenge, and I suspect might have impacted on your faith as a way to help you to maintain good mental health and an upbeat look on life, having been through that experience. But
absolutely, yes.
What it illustrates is this is a separate set of data, independent of the autism survey data, that also verifies that we have this chronic epidemic trend going on in children. So when you see multiple different data sets all pointing to the same general direction, that our children are being harmed and it's getting worse year by year by year, then you can have a lot more confidence that this is a real phenomenon. It's not just some sort of statistical quirk. And I think that's the importance of those data.
Yes, absolutely. Well, all right, so that's if he doesn't accomplish anything else, that will be a major, major accomplishment for the American people. Before we go to the next thing, it occurred to me, Dr. Malone, I don't need to tell you how divided and really dysfunctional, you mentioned it, the NIH, the CDC, the FDA, and he's over all of those, HHS, how dysfunctional they are. And I'm guessing that all the thousands of people that serve under that agency's leadership have a lot of rebellion and bad, terrible attitudes toward RFK Jr. because they were all in on the COVID vaccine, and it's a culture. So I'm sure he's getting a lot of resistance. But my question is, do you think that this whole thing of him working toward the health of our children might be a unifying factor among people who working in those agencies should have a natural concern for the health of people? I just wonder if this will be everybody. We're all in this together when it comes to our children. I wonder if it might be a softening influence for them.
So here's a point of view from somebody that's worked with the federal government for most of their career, myself. my experience, there are certainly plenty of federal employees that are highly partisan. But in general, federal workers tend to be nonpartisan. They have to be by law. They're not. This is when we see this partisanship that's going on. For instance, James O'Keefe has captured some of this in his OMG group with his interview style. People that are admitting to all kinds of strategies to derail the MAHA movement. Those are just a small subset. James O'Keefe has to work hard to find those people. Most of the government workers are folks that are very focused on security. They honestly try to do a good job. Yeah, they're slackers, but in my experience, most of them try to approach their job professionally and to do the right thing. You can't work for the federal government. Well, I guess you can and be totally corrupt. There's plenty of those examples, but most of them are just there to do their job on a daily basis. They tend to be family people. They take their kids to soccer, and they generally want to do the right thing. And I think for these clear initiatives and messaging having to do with family, children's health, general overall well-being of the population, I can't see how those people won't get behind that. There's always going to be the partisan outliers, and many of those are folks that have compromised themselves in various ways, and so they're not really objective. And those, among others, are the ones that, you know, it's the slackers, the ones that are really quite aggressive about their rights to not have to work in an office, their sense of entitlement, their sense of partisan positions, advocacy for DEI, sense of having somehow been aggrieved by the system. Those folks, they don't belong in the federal government. I'm sure there's a place for them. They can go work for George Soros or somebody else. But we need federal workers that are committed to the enterprise of serving the president in an honest and forthright way, serving the executive. If they're executive branch workers, they should be nonpartisan and focused on doing their job and following the direction that the executive, who is the unitary elected official, they're not elected, the following the positions that are taken. And then if there's a new president, when a new president comes in, because Mr. Trump is only going to be one term, then they must have the fortitude to adapt and serve that next president that'll have different opinions. That's the way the federal bureaucracy is supposed to work.
Right.
And this entitlement that that these political elected officials are only temporary, and the true government is the deep state and the administrative state, and they will carry on no matter what, and they will just be passive aggressive if the elected officials are trying to bring other policies. That's just not acceptable. That's not the way the system was built. And that kind of attitude has to be rooted out, I'm sorry to say.
Well, Dr. Robert Malone is our guest today, and we had such a good time that we talked a lot, and I decided we would put this in two parts for you, and on the next episode with him, we are going to really get into the measles situation, and he has some really valuable information that I know that you will appreciate, but that'll be on the next podcast, but don't go away because there's more to say on this one, so stay tuned. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast. And so powerfully, it's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at afr.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
New reaction today to the CDC revealing a sharp spike in autism cases in children ages 4 to 8. The numbers show 1 in 31 8-year-olds were identified with autism spectrum disorder in 2022, up from 1 in 36 in 2020. Health Secretary RFK Jr. claims environmental toxins are responsible for this dramatic rise.
Genes don't cause epidemics. You need an environmental toxin. These are kids who will never pay taxes. They'll never hold a job. They'll never play baseball. They'll never write a poem. They'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted. And we have to recognize we are doing this to our children.
Yes, we are, and we don't quite know why. We don't really understand what it is that's in our food. We've trusted our, you know, when I go to foreign countries, which I have often done, ones that are not regulated by any kind of safety standards, I often think when I'm putting something in my mouth, There's been no FDA to check this out or give it the blue a stamp of approval, but here I go eating it. But in this country, we've had the luxury of having like a blue ribbon panel examine, test, and make sure that our food is safe to eat. We take that for granted. But things have changed. And while we weren't watching, somebody wasn't, we started feeding people, feeding our kids, feeding ourselves things that were not good for us, like the red dye. That's kind of a new area for me completely, perhaps for you too. But what is causing all of this? What is causing it? Is it vaccines? Is the measles vaccine causing, you know, more measles? Is it the food? Is it the red dye? What in the world is it? Is it something the mother does when the baby's in the womb? I don't know, but they're going to try to figure out what the problems are, and aren't we glad? And speaking of that, just another angle of all of this is the funding required. You know, about 2% of all school children right now have autism severe enough to justify special needs funding. Is that something? That's amazing. So the budget right now, currently, we spend about $36 billion annually on special education. Now, I used to resist that, but way, way back when they started implementing that. And then my daughter, even during the time I had my daughter, she was quite young, but I was the recipient of those dollars. I have to tell you, I was able to send my daughter to school when normally she could never have attended school, not in her condition. You know, they would take her on a bus and the teachers would work with her, and it was a real blessing to me. I could just say, I'm sure there could be some cutting or some, you know, I'm sure it's abused, you know, like anything else, but it has a benefit, but probably it's being abused. It probably needs a little dose treatment, but the U.S. spends over $36 billion annually on special education. So, and that doesn't include the children who don't fit the criteria of being disabled and those that need help. So, the rates of children, again, with disabilities have doubled over the past 50 years. Isn't that something? That's since my daughter was born. So just to bring it home, we know that our country is in a sort of a health crisis and we need help. And aren't we thankful that we have it? Aren't we thankful that we have a president who does care? You know he does. He has big a heart. He has a big heart. I don't care what the naysayers and the haters say about him. He cares. He talks about all the time the Ukrainian young men being killed on the field. He talks about it from his heart. He has a big, compassionate heart. He, long before he was ever president, he was helping sick children in various forms, helping people. So he cares. And he said, because he cares, he took the risk of the controversial risk of appointing RFK Jr. to be the head of Health and Human Services. That's HHS. And, you know, he took on a lot. It was a rough confirmation because RFK Jr. is controversial because of the things he's said and done through these many years. But it took a lot of guts. And RFK Jr. has appointed two men who are just stellar. They were beaten like pulps to a pulp. And when they objected to the way COVID was being described, to the forcing of vaccination and all of that, and they were both men of a high reputation and a great accomplishment, Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Makary. And I'm so glad that RFK Jr. appointed them to these high positions, the head of NIH, the head of FDA. So because what a full circle thing this has become. And I think it's powerful. And it's like redemption and justice all rolled up into one in a very redemptive way. Love it. Love it. Love it. So I'm thanking God for that. And I think I'm out of words for today. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, who shows you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to Sandy Rios 24/7.